Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show that focuses on people and organizations making an impact in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. And joining us first this morning is Mr. Bill Hutmaker. He's the chairman of the number one British flying training school in Terrell, Texas. Bill, how you doing?
I am doing great, Chris. It's a great morning.
I am glad you're here, and I find your story to be so fascinating. First of all, let's talk about how in the world there is a British flying training school museum in Terrell, Texas. I know this has something to do with World War II.
It certainly does, and it started back in 1940 when a group of cadets came over and trained to fly. And just kind of back before that, the Lend-Lease Act passed back then, authorized the money to train civilian pilots from different countries. So in Terrell, Texas, they realized the British needed cadets, and they needed trained pilots. It was very tough for them to train them over there between the weather and the Nazi air superiority. They were getting shot down just about faster than they could train them. So Franklin Roosevelt realized this was an issue, and he got the Lend-Lease Act passed. And in that, it provided for British flying training schools, of which there were six. The one in Terrell was the largest and the first. So a group of citizens got together in Terrell. They purchased land. They built an airport. And then the cadets came over. A total of about 2,200 over a four-year period came through the school, of which about 1,800 earned their wings. And the cadets basically would go get on a ship in England. They would come over to either Nova Scotia or they'd come into New York. They would have to resign their RAF credentials and their RAF commission because we could not train soldiers. They would then board a train from either Nova Scotia or New York. They would come to Dallas, get on a school bus, come out to Terrell, spend about 26 weeks learning how to fly in two-wing biplanes called Stearmans or in what's known as an AT-6. Then they would reverse that process, go back to Nova Scotia, pick up their RAF commissions, go back via boat back to England, and then they would fight the war.
This is an absolutely amazing story. I think it's hidden history. I mean, it's like, okay, we've all heard about World War II. We heard about the United States getting involved. We heard about, you know, fighting the Germans and then the Japanese as well. But I think very few people realize that there's this training center right in Terrell. You're painting the picture. Let's paint it a little bit further. You mentioned the weather. So when you think about England, you kind of think about, oh, and I've actually been there. You think about London, the London fog and foggy weather. And the country of England is not that large as well, as right? So that played into it. England needed some places where they could train up their pilots, right?
Certainly did. They between the weather and, again, the Nazi air superiority, they were having trouble training pilots. And I guess a reporter over in the U.S. put it pretty succinctly when she was writing. And she said she went out and she looked over the flight line and looked at all the airplanes. And she looked at the cadets who had come 5,000 miles and realized a lot of them didn't even know how to drive.
Right.
And yet they were coming over to learn how to fly airplanes. And she said she looked out and she wondered to herself, why on earth would these kids, and again, they're 17, 18-year-old kids, why would these kids come over to learn how to fly here? And she said she looked up, and it was the wide open skies, the clear skies, and that's why.
That is absolutely amazing. And to just break it down even further, you say they would take a boat to Nova Scotia. For those who aren't familiar, that's like northeast Canada. It's like right near Greenland. And then they get to New York, and then they would take a train halfway across the United States down to Texas, then get on school buses from Dallas to Terrell. That has to be a couple of weeks.
It did take some time to get them here and to get them back. So, yes, there was a lot of time involved. And, again, a lot of these kids, it's the first time they had ever been away from home. So there were several things that went on in their letters. And that becomes also fascinating. And all this is brought out in the museum, which is a result of all of this training. The number one topic that the kids wrote home about was food.
Wow.
If you remember, over there, they were rationing everything because they were just getting bombed like crazy, and they were trying to get their soldiers fed. And the kids come over here, and there is everything to eat. And the number one topic that they wrote home about was the food, and how a lot of them felt guilty because they just had all the different kinds of food they want. They had all the different foods. They had as much as they wanted, and that was the number one topic written home about.
That is absolutely amazing. I love these stories. And by the way, we're talking with Bill Hutmaker. He is the chairman of the number one British Flying Training School Museum in Terrell, Texas. And I love these stories, and it's actually somewhat topical, especially with the war in Ukraine and Russia. A lot of people have been kind of following that now, completely different times with the Nazi Germany situation in World War II in England. But still, you had the bombings. You had people trying to stave off, the Hitler regime. And you had the entire world trying to band together on this. And the United States played a big part of this. And here's Texas, North Texas, Terrell, Texas in particular, being a part of this as well. So how did Terrell, Texas happen to step up? Let's talk about the individuals in Terrell who, like you said, got in touch with the right people and said, we've got space and we can build something where they can train.
Well, they were individual businessmen in town, and basically they realized that the U.S. sooner or later was going to be in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And they also realized that the training school would be a big financial boom for the city of Terrell and would provide lots of jobs.
Right, so, jobs. Jobs. It's all about jobs because it's the economy.
Oh, yes. It was certainly about jobs. It was about helping the British, but,
sure.
But certainly it was about jobs to be sure, for sure on that. And they got together, and they got in touch with Washington, and they had Speaker of their House, I believe it was Sam Rayburn,
mm-hmm. Texas,
push all this through. But they had to buy the land first before they could do anything. And so they got together, and in less than 36 hours, they raised $36,800 in 1941. In today's dollars, that's over $850,000 that they raised in less than 36 hours to buy the airport, the land to put the airport on.
Wow.
And from there, they were able to go and get the contract from the government to do the school.
That is impressive. Now, in the world of sports, there are some people who may or may not know, and you might be one of these people that know, Tom Landry, the legendary coach of the Dallas Cowboys, was a fighter pilot in World War II. And he actually had a mission. His plane got shot down. I think it was in France. But, of course, he survived all of that and wound up playing football and becoming a legendary football coach with the NFL and the Dallas Cowboys. But I keep thinking about how different Texans, helped fight the war in World War II. And then you say there were a lot of British soldiers who actually came to Terrell. How many of them actually came back again or wind up staying?
It's very interesting. They started out with an association, and they would come over every year or two, and they would meet, and there could be 50, 60 of them, 100 of them coming over. But then as the years went on, there were fewer and fewer, and they decided to start the museum back in the late 90s,
mm-hmm.
and they started bringing their artifacts over. So most of the things that are in the museum are actually from the cadets or from their families. So not only are they artifacts, but there's a story behind them. There's a picture behind them. And they started this, like I said, the museum, and it's just grown from there. And I learned something every time I go through it. There are pictures, there are uniforms, there are letters, there are all sorts of things in the museum. As I tell people, for a town the size of Terrell, we've got a heck of a museum.
That sounds so impressive. Can we go through a timeline here? So they train up the pilots, and you know the war ends after a while. Can you talk about how long the airport and the training center stayed in place? Because I know once the war ended, it probably wasn't used that much.
That's correct. Once the war ended, they actually decommissioned it, and it went back to being an airport, which it is today. And there are only a couple of hangars left that were a part of the original school.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very shortly after the end of the war that it was all decommissioned. And and in your previous question, you asked about people that may have come back. And one of the stories we have is a gentleman named Henry Madgwick, who came through the school, earned his wings, fell in love with a girl from Terrell, as a number of them did.
Mm-hmm.
He went back, fought the war. After the war was done, she went over to England, and they got married, had a couple of kids. They ended up coming back, and in the 50s, he got his U.S. citizenship, I believe, in 55, got active in Terrell politics, and was actually mayor of Terrell in, 1979, 1980.
Wow. Born in England and came over. That's a crazy story.
It is, and there are lots of different stories. One of the cadets that came through was a part of. If you've seen the movie, one of them is if you've watched NPR, All Creatures Great and Small.
Right,
Siegfried, the older vet, came through the flight school.
Wow. Now you mentioned,
and then we had another one that was a part of The Great Escape.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
Yes. In fact, he and another gentleman, he and two other gentlemen went. They were all three caught. He was put in the cooler. The other two were shot by the Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So,
and so there's the tie to Terrell.
Stories.
Yeah, there's a tie to the Terrell, Texas flight school. That is so amazing. So they closed it down. It became like a regular airport. But and you mentioned in the 1990s, they said, we've got all these items. Let's bring them back over from England, or we've got some items that are here in town, and let's just make this thing, like I said, it's a Hidden Figures kind of story where you can let people find out how Terrell, Texas had an impact on World War II.
Correct. And it's a great museum. They started the museum. It's been upgraded over the years. We're actually in one building. We have a hangar, mm-hmm, across the way that has a static display AT-6. And then we have the main museum. And the city of Terrell has recognized that we are a real big part of Terrell and tourism. And so they're in the process of rehabbing a building in downtown Terrell, where we're going to be able to add to our collections and have a downtown location. So we're real excited.
So people can come out and they can see some of the artifacts, but can they see any planes, and are any of these planes functional?
We have a static display AT-6, which is not functional.
Mm-hmm.
But on holidays and things like that, we have, as a matter of fact, July 3rd and July 4th, we have two of the Stearman biplanes coming in that were actually used as trainers at the school.
My goodness. And so there's going to be a big celebration?
Yes, we are. We're doing fireworks at the airport on July 4th. On July 3rd, we have a group out of Nashville called the 1,000 Horses coming in for a street dance concert, and there'll be food trucks and kids' activities and all sorts of things.
We're talking about the number one British flying training school museum in Terrell, Texas. Bill Hutmaker is the chairman. And Bill, I want to know how you got involved, because you sound like you have such an interesting job. This isn't even a job. It's like a career, because it's so much fun.
It is a lot of fun. It becomes a passion. My father was with the B-17 group out, mm-hmm, in England. They were the first group that bombed Berlin. And from that, I got a passion for flying. I started flying when I was 16. and I have flown a lot ever since. Not flying currently because of some medicines I take, mm-hmm. but I absolutely have a passion for flying. My wife and I both have a passion for World War II. We've been to the D-Day beaches. We've been to all the different museums, and from that, I got involved with the museum here, and things got out of control, and I'm chairman now.
That is absolutely amazing. Now, I also heard that you've gotten invited to the Queen's Jubilee. What is that? And explain how that went down, and I know you were proud and impressed and surprised.
Yes, all three. The British consul out of Houston came up a few weeks ago. We got to meet with him. And the Queen's Jubilee is celebrating her 70th year as being queen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different celebrations going on around the world. There's one going on here in Texas. And out of the meeting that we had with the British consul out of Houston, I got an invitation to the Jubilee next Thursday down there, June the 2nd. And my wife and I are excited to go down. Plus, we have a retired RAF pilot who is on our board of directors, will be joining us, and the three of us will be down there for the Jubilee celebration. And we are very honored to have been invited to it and are looking forward to being there.
It sounds like it. All right. Do you have a wardrobe? What are the kind of things you have to wear, and what are some of the activities that's going to take place?
We don't know exactly what's going to take place. We just got the invitation. There is a wardrobe, and I had not worn a suit in 12 years. So, yes, there was some purchasing going on at a local store. And my wife said, told me, she said, this is something that you have to dress for. It can be royal ascot with a top hat and things like that. But since I'm not from England, I'm not doing that. I'm wearing a nice suit and a tie, and we will go that way to it.
I bet you might bring some cowboy boots, too.
I just might. You got to do, sometimes
that's right.
You got to put a little touch to it there.
You got to be authentic. You got to keep it authentic, especially
right.
Since you represent Terrell in North Texas.
That is correct, and we are very aware of that, but we're like I said, we are very honored to have been invited to it and are really looking forward to going.
Now, you mentioned that you've been flying since you were like 16 years old. Where did you grow up? I mean, name the area, and did you go to school anywhere? And just kind of tell us about you a little bit, because people like to feel like they know you a little bit when they hear these stories.
Well, I grew up in Illinois, mm-hmm. and came down to go to Texas Christian University.
TCU.
Back in 72, graduated summa cum mediocre. And we've been in Texas ever since. I married a Texas girl, and so I'm one of those that comes down and stays. It's, worked in sales for years and years with IBM, retired out of there, bought another business, and just recently retired out of that so that I can spend more time at the museum. I also happen to be chairman of the airport board of directors for the Terrell Airport, so those two things kind of go together.
Very nice, very nice. How much traffic comes to Terrell? I mean, when you think about the smaller airports, North Texas is so large, and even in the proper DFW area, you've got airports in like Addison, and I could go on and on and on, and Arlington and Grand Prairie. In fact, a lot of these little planes fly in for Dallas Cowboy games at AT&T Stadium, so I know there's a lot of airports, but how much traffic actually goes back and forth to Terrell and DFW or Houston?
Yeah, Terrell is it's a local airport. But we have a lot of traffic, and a couple of the reasons are, one, we have low fuel prices. But the other is we're what's known as an uncontrolled airport, which means there's not a tower at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So pilots don't have to interact with the tower and spend time doing that. They can come out from Mesquite or come down from McKinney or wherever, and they can do touch and goes. They can do different things at the airport. We do have some business jets that come in from time to time, and they'll refuel or they'll restock or whatever they want at the airport. So it's a fairly busy airport.
Okay, so I want to dive into the area, the population, the background of some of the people in Terrell, because I know Jamie Foxx, the superstar actor, musician, is from Terrell, and he used to play football in Terrell, and I got a chance to meet him and hang out with him a couple of times, and he was in Dallas, and I know everybody in Terrell is proud of Jamie. And we talk about the museum and the fact that you had all these different British pilots training there. And I also know, you know, driving down to Austin all the time from Dallas, that in the little town of West Texas, there's a large Czech population. You know, they've got all the different foods down there that everybody loves. West Texas and Abbott, Texas, down there on the way, and you can get all the kolaches and things like that. So are there a lot of British people who live in Terrell, or is it just a little few people that, you know, from the pilots that came back?
There are not a lot of British people that live in Terrell,
mm-hmm.
But it's a few of them came back. So Terrell is it's just kind of a it's a community east of southeast of Dallas,
mm-hmm.
and the big thing for us is probably the museum. There are a lot of things that are going on in the downtown revitalization now. I don't know. We had, I think, one of the first Buc-ee's in North Texas.
You know, that's something to brag about. Buc-ee's is big time. Everybody loves Buc-ee's.
It absolutely is. And by the way, we have some great friends of ours that live in West, and we get down there now and then to see them. So Terrell is a great town to come to. There are a lot of different events we do each year out here. We just finished with the Terrell Jubilee, which is different from the British Jubilee. And then we do a tour of homes around Christmas time. We've got the big 4th of July fireworks, and the same company that shoots the fireworks at Kaboom Town in Addison comes down and shoots our fireworks too. So we've got a heck of a display. And it's at the airport, and I guess there were like 12,000 people there last year, and we're looking for even more this year. But there are different things that go on. The Chamber of Commerce is real active. The Visitors Bureau is active. The city's real active. We're going to be doing a Brit Bash November 12th of this year, which is going to be a celebration of things British, where we're going to be having some things going on downtown that day. And then that night, we're probably going to do a James Bond-themed casino.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, black tie and the whole thing with Aston Martins and all of that. So the town is active with a lot of things going on in it, and it's a great place to live. Now, that being said, we've only been here about 10 years, but it's just a wonderful place to live.
It sounds like, and again, I've been through Terrell, you know, from here and there, heading out to East Texas and going out towards Tyler and whatnot, and now there's another reason because we're going to check out that museum. I also, just looking at the website, which is absolutely awesome, by the way, I see this. Did you know? I did not know this, and I'm a guy that absolutely loves maps. I did not know that the distance from Terrell to Houston by plane is basically from London to Paris.
Correct. And you can take a look at that on a big board that we have in the museum, where it has outlined where all the cities are in Texas and Oklahoma, Arkansas around,
mm-hmm.
and then it has overlaid England, the UK, like the UK continent with England,
sure.
all the places around
Europe.
It, all the way down to Germany and things like that, so that the cadets could understand that flying from Terrell to Houston was about what you were talking about, the distances you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the city itself rebuilt the terminal, the airport terminal, about 5 years ago, and it looks a lot like the actual control towers set up looked like for the school. And in the floor of that terminal is that same map.
Wow. That's impressive.
It's in terrazzo tile.
You are painting pictures. It's making, you know, not just me, but a lot of people who are listening want to come out and check it out. I keep thinking about things in Texas that people have no idea about. And, Bill, you may or may not know about this. Did you know up in, I guess it's northwest Texas, in Wichita Falls, on the way to Wichita Falls, did you know they have camels on the ranches out there?
I did not know that. So that is a fact I did not know.
Listen to this, because we're talking about small world, and who would have thought that, you know, British pilots were training in Terrell. In Wichita Falls, right outside of Wichita Falls, I found this out when I was heading out covering Dallas Cowboys training camp when they were out in Wichita Falls in the early 90s. Lo and behold, there's camels out there because there were some very rich oil tycoons in Texas who knew Saudi oil tycoons, right? And they thought that they could race these camels out here on the ranches in Texas against horses. And they would race camels, I kid you not, to race in Texas. And there's still camels on the sides of the roads on these ranches on the way to Wichita Falls. I kid you not.
The next time we're buzzing up 287 that way, we are going to take a look for them.
That's right, right up 287. Okay, so back to the your museum, the number one British flying training school museum. You mentioned that Terrell was the biggest. So there, you say there were six in the continental United States that the British pilots would train. Can you tell
Correct.
Us where the other locations and how many, I guess, students or pilots would train there?
So there were a total of about 11,000 cadets that came through the different all the different schools, and there were six schools, and I can get some of them, but I'm probably not going to get all of them. I know there was here, there was Miami, Oklahoma, there was Clewiston, Florida, there was Mesa, Arizona, there was Sweetwater, Texas was just very briefly, and there's another one up in Oklahoma. Anyway, there were six of them that were there. And it's, as I said, there were a total of about 11,000 cadets that came through. Ours was the first and the largest of them. And we have the only museum.
That is absolutely amazing because, you know, you got to preserve history. You really have to preserve history. And I like the fact that you have this museum there where people can find out a small part of World War II history. And again, you're having a celebration in July?
Correct. July 3rd and July 4th is the is the celebration that's going on. Freedom Fest, that's what it's called. Now, there's a website, freedomfest.com, I believe. And you can go, and on the night of July 3rd, we're having the concert with 1,000 horses coming in and food trucks. And we will have, it's 18 and over. We're going to have some adult beverages there that night. And then July 4th is open to the public. There will be no adult beverages that night. So people can bring their chairs and their tents or whatever, and they can sit and watch fireworks, or they can visit the food trucks or do the other things that are going on.
Now, this is Memorial Day weekend, and we know there's a lot of veterans. In fact, there's a lot of World War II vets or people who have World War II vets in their families. Is the museum open on Monday, or is it closed, or is there anything that's going to be a reminder where people can come by, or should they just try to travel there sometime during the week?
I would recommend during the week. We're open Wednesday through Saturdays,
okay,
10 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And or if we have groups that are coming through or people that want to see it, we will open at any time. We had a group of 50 come through last week on a Tuesday. We were more than happy to welcome them. I think there was a group of 28 that came through this morning. So we do a lot of group events. We can do lunches. We can do dinners. We can do all sorts of things at the museum.
I was about to ask you about that because, you know, nowadays people like to do unique things. They like to have an event or a private party or something, and sometimes they do them at museums if they're available, and sometimes they do them at other places. So you guys are available for those kind of things.
That is correct. We are more than happy to do them and make sure that everybody there has a great experience.
Bill, can you tell everybody the website again, and if there's any other phone numbers or email addresses or any other way they can contact to find more information about the number one British Flying Training School Museum?
Yeah, the website is www.bftsmuseum.org. And if anybody wants any information, they can certainly call the museum, of which I am now drawing a mental blank. And
that's quite all right.
Or they can certainly get in touch with us at info@bftsmuseum.org.
And let me tell you something, Bill. I'm going to tell you how easy it is. Just go Google. Google is your best friend. You put up there British Flight Museum, Terrell, Texas, and all the information just shows up. I promise you. The exact location for the website, the entire nine yards. Hey, Bill, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much for letting us talk about our museum. We are really excited about it.
Most definitely. That's Bill Hutmaker. He is the chairman, the number one British flying training school in Terrell, Texas. The museum is awesome, and congratulations again for being invited to the Queen's Jubilee.
Thank you very much, and y'all have a great weekend.
You too. And joining us now is Mr. Robert Walsh. He's the president of Next Metropolitan Foundation. How you doing, Robert?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing great. I'm so glad we're able to have you on because you've been doing a lot of things over the last couple of years here with the Next Mission and the Next Foundation. The Next Metropolitan, you guys have been doing a lot of partnering. In fact, I think just a couple of days ago, You did a venture with Dak Prescott's Fight Finish Foundation. He was hosting a North Texas community town hall in Arlington. Can you talk about how Next became a part of that and how I think he had also the superintendent of the North Crowley High Schools and school system, Dr. Michael McFarland, Al Jones, the Arlington police chief. He's a good friend of yours, right, Al?
Yes, sir.
And you had Chief Noakes, a Fort Worth police chief. Sierra McFan, she's also a partner with you with the Next Metropolitan, and she's a licensed clinical social worker. You had Ellis Valentine, the Texas Rangers alumni. And you also had Anthony Adjahar, sergeant with the Dallas Police. Can you talk about that event a little bit and how it was a nice conversation with leaders?
Yeah, sure. I've been fortunate enough to be a part of a steer committee that is headed by Dak Prescott's Faith Fight Finish Foundation, where we're trying to bridge the gap between law enforcement and community. So
we get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
I was invited to participate in the panel based off of my experiences as a local law enforcement officer as well as a mentor with Next Metropolitan.
And it sounds like it was a great occasion. I think the moderator was Ryan Tillman, the Breaking Barriers United.
Yes.
He's a great, great guy.
Great guy. Yes, sir.
And can you talk about some of the things that you all were talking about? And it's ironic because this thing was set up before the situation with the school shooting a couple of days ago, and I'm sure that topic came up as well.
Yeah, this was something that, you know, we began doing in the early half of this year, where we really wanted to get a better understanding on how we can serve our community better in multiple aspects, and not just as mentors, but also as law enforcement, as well as parents. So, we were fortunate enough to partner with some great organizations to make the event possible. Again, these young people had great questions, and I was fortunate to be on that panel to not only just provide great feedback, but to listen to some of the feedback from the community leaders as well as law enforcement leaders. And like you said, Ryan Tillman's a great guy as well,
mm-hmm.
Who was a great moderator who kind of steered everything. But this was definitely Dak's vision, and I was just happy to be a part of it.
What were some of the questions that the kids had? Because I know they are looking for mentors, but they also have questions. And because these are not like kids from years ago. They've got social media. There's so much that they're aware of that, you know, we were growing up, we weren't aware of every single thing.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the questions that really stood out for me was a young man asked just for advice on being a minority male who does not have a father figure in his life, and how can he move forward in life with the absence of that male role model. And, of course, that was dear to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I told him is, first, I wanted him to understand that he's important. You know, he's important to our community, and to involve himself in like-minded people. For instance, peer mentorship is extremely important. So I gave him some words of advice to just kind of set himself up for the future. I know to set short-term goals. I know as fast-paced as the world is right now, you know, we sometimes forget to just slow down and take it day by day. And,
right.
You know, and that's easier said than done, definitely. You know, and my words for this young man is to set short-term goals 30 days at a time. And as you set those goals will help you build long-term success. So his question was definitely one that stood out. There was also a young man who asked a question, law enforcement related question on, you know, how does it feel to be a African-American male in the community as well as an African-American police officer?
Right.
And how do we deal with it? And again, I could answer that question. You know, growing up in New Orleans and being, you know, of course, a law enforcement officer, I get it from both ends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately after an incident happens that, you know, goes viral, and I get calls from family members, because if they don't know any officers, they definitely know me. And it's tough sometimes. It's just the honest truth. It's tough, but I understand that you can't judge every situation by what you see on TV. You have to know the facts of the investigation. And sometimes I don't give them the answer that they probably want, but I always remain neutral. And at the end of the day, when I walk down the street and I'm not in uniform, I want to be known and treated the same way. So it was important for that young man to know that sometimes I experience the same thing that you experience. But the one thing I really encouraged him to do is just comply. If you encounter an officer who's elevated and then you elevate, it's counterproductive. You know, someone has to remain calm. Someone has to have a level head. And then if he feels like he was mistreated by this particular officer, then follow up. You know, internal affairs, ask the officer for its badge number and as well as name. And I follow up with an internal affairs complaint, because we're all held responsible for the actions that we do have.
Exactly. And I think that if everybody has a greater understanding of each other and calmly walk themselves through these situations, these scenarios, is usually leads to a better result. And that's why I'm glad you took the time to kind of explain that a little bit. And also, as a police officer of color, as you mentioned before, a lot of people want to know more, because they either see a stereotype on television of certain police officers, or they want to know if you're able to help other police officers understand their communities better, right?
Correct.
And so your hands are full, because you're kind of the go-between. You're kind of like the go-between, because I know there's other police officers that ask you things, and then there's, you know, people in the neighborhoods, in the community, that ask you some of those same kind of questions, and they expect you to be able to be the go-between.
Yes. And like I tell them, I don't have all the answers.
Right.
You know, I can tell you what I would do as Robert, but I can't answer, you know, for what the policies are in, you know, in other agencies, as well as what that officer is thinking at that time. So it's tough to judge that book when you're just sitting back and reading it, because when you're in the situation, it's just one of those things where you actually have to make a quick decision. One of the things that I believe has always helped me is to treat people like you want to be treated.
Yes.
You know, because, and have open and honest conversations when you're not engaging in law enforcement. You know, if I'm not actively on an investigation, there's nothing wrong with just going by and just saying hi to people and getting to know them on a different level. And, you know, communication is the key to everything that we do. You know, no one wants to go to work and fight or have to use any type of force. So communication, I've found, has been the foundation of everything that I do.
It's so ironic that you mentioned communication, because that's what that town hall was all about, when they brought together, you know, youth, community groups, law enforcement leaders, educational leaders, mental health experts, And talking about how everybody can work together for a better North Texas. And it is about communication. So were you at all surprised at the turnout, or were you at all happy and satisfied that, you know, people had the conversations? Because, again, everybody doesn't have the answers, but it's good that people have a conversation so they can try to understand each other better.
Yeah, we were definitely happy with the turnout. And again, sometimes we want quick results, but what we did yesterday was continue to plant seeds.
Mm-hmm.
As we continue to plant seeds, you know, we'll see those fruits, you know, those kids bear those fruits. And it may not be within a month or within a year, but eventually you'll see those results. And I know that doesn't solve the problem right away, but we didn't get into the problem right away as well. So we have to be resilient as well as have patience as we move forward and continue to instill values into our youth as they move forward and become future leaders in our country.
And that leads me to talk about Next Metropolitan Foundation, organization that you founded and you're the president of. And I want to first ask, what made you want to do this? And I see on the website, the website, by the way, is absolutely awesome. It's at the Next Foundation. That's N-E-X Foundation.org. And Robert, can you explain how you started this thing? And let me say the quote real quick. Quote, "It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." And that's by the great Frederick Douglass. Let's talk about how you decided to create this organization and some of the things you guys have been doing.
Well, I guess the short version of it, again, I grew up in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, growing up in the New Orleans area, in the fifth grade, I knew I was going to be a police officer. I knew what I wanted to do. And when I graduated from high school, I just wasn't there yet. You know, I wasn't mature enough to understand what the next step was for me in life. You know, I had great parents. They instilled a lot of values in me, planted a lot of seeds, but I wasn't there. I wasn't ready to bear those fruits, I guess. And I was never in trouble. I wasn't a trouble kid, but at the end of high school, I barely graduated. And it wasn't because I wasn't smart enough. It was because I was lazy. You know, and that's not something that I'm proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But as my friends were going to college, I started working at Walmart. I started pushing shopping carts at Walmart. And there was a gentleman that came to the store all the time. And he saw me and asked me one day, "Young man, what are you going to do with yourself? What are you going to do with your life? I see you here all the time." And at that point, I began to manifest the destiny that God had for me. You know, and I enrolled in college. I went to Southern University, A&M College in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't look back. The great thing about that is I matured. And those friends that I wanted to be like and was envious of, they were coming back home because they were failing out of school. I had a year under my belt to mature and understand what life was really about. And so when I went to school, I earned a bachelor's and a master's degree in criminal justice. And I started to mentor as well.
Mm-hmm.
My first mentoring agency was the Big Brother, Big Sister program. I was involved in a school-based program, and I really loved it because the thing I felt so good about where I was in life, and I realized I didn't get there without the help of coaches and family members and just friends who believed in something that I didn't see myself. And when I transitioned out of grad school into here in Texas, I became a police officer. And I understood, my goal was always to be an undercover officer. I always wanted to work in narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the environment that I grew up in. And I understood what it was doing to communities.
Right.
And so I was fortunate enough to be a covert narcotics detective here in the city of Arlington for 6 years. And as I transitioned from that position, I became a supervisor in the schools. So I was a school resource supervisor as well. So I started to understand the school-based portion, the school safety. And then from there, I transitioned into the homicide unit. So I have a well-rounded understanding of some of the things that these kids are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw myself in a lot of them.
So I always had a dream to start a nonprofit. A lot of people never knew that I was a mentor because when I worked in the covert operations unit, you don't really interact with officers very much. So for my mental health, I mentored.
That was the balance. I hear you. That was the balance for your life. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So it was a big surprise. I know this is a little long, but it was
surprising. Go ahead.
It was a bit surprising to a lot of people that I was a mentor. And I started to see things a little bit better as I continued to mature. And I decided, you know, I can do this. There was a kid that I decided to dress for prom. When I was working in the schools, I was looking for three young men to dress for prom. I'm a suit guy. I love suits. You know, I know the feeling. I feel like a suit's like a drug, you know. You get that good feeling.
Right.
It gives you a taste of success.
Exactly. It makes you feel like you're important and you feel like you're responsible and you're looking good and you're feeling good.
Yes, sir. Definitely. And so one of the counselors referred me to a young man who was 20 years old and still in high school. And I didn't think that was possible, but he was 20 years old.
Wow.
And she told me his story. And I told her that I wanted to meet him. And this kid was pulled out of school in like the fourth grade and eventually decided to go back to school on his own and made his way up to his senior year. And I said, this is a kid that I definitely want to help. And I felt like after meeting him and helping him get to graduation and dressing him for prom and finding a date and just, you know, cleaning up, getting a haircut, you know, he did something for me. And I said, you know what? Think about how many other kids we can do this for. So when I started the mentoring aspect, the nonprofit, believe me, I didn't know anything about it. I just had a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to a couple of my friends and I said, hey, I think this is the time to do this. I said, if the Lord had ever spoke to me, clearly this was it. And so we started Next Metropolitan in 2020. And unfortunately, the pandemic happened.
Yeah, March of 2020. And tell us how you got through that, because sometimes a lot of people have to make a pivot. I've talked to a lot of different organizations and individuals that said that the pandemic might have either brought them down or they learned how to do things in an even better way.
Yeah, you know, that first year, we were more so focused on service. So we were certified as a 501c3, a charity nonprofit, in February, and then the pandemic happens in March.
Mm-hmm.
So we immediately started to just serve the community. We started working at food banks.
Right.
We started working at a lot of the food banks and just giving back to the community, you know, and the nonprofit was never about the financial or, you know, the aspect of it. I just wanted to give back, and I felt like I had something to give, and that's what we did for a whole year. We didn't ask anybody for anything, and we just wanted to get out and just serve the community. And not knowing that it was serving us as well, just kind of interacting with people and networking. And so the second year, we were able to kind of start putting our program into place. And the mental health aspect was really one of the biggest things. So Miss Sierra McFan, you know, she's one of our clinical social workers and she's a therapist and she's also my assistant director. And, you know, people like her, as well as Deshonda Greenwood with Forever Care Resources, they're lending their services to us because they believe in what we do. And so as we kind of just navigated through COVID, we were able to continue to do whatever we needed to do to help the community. So mm-hmm. we believe in being innovative, all the way down to installing library boxes. We started to build library boxes in underserved communities and placing them in apartment complexes, filling them with books.
Right.
Just so the kids, as they walk around, you know, hey, grab a book, you know, read a book,
mm-hmm.
you know, return it. Just You know, so that's one of the initiatives that we continue to do because, again, we're serving the community that gives to us as well.
You mentioned on the website the next goal. And by the way, tell us why you chose the word next, capital N-E-X, and not have the T. But you mentioned on the goal, educate and build sustainable character in young men through life skills, etiquette, professional development, community engagement, conflict resolution, financial literacy, which I think is huge, and more importantly, leadership. Can you talk about how that became your goal, but also why you use the word next with capital N-E-X?
Yeah, so that's a question that everyone asks, you know, does N-E-X mean anything? And it really doesn't. It means exactly what it sounds like, next. I took the T off. I wanted to stand out.
Right, there
and
you go.
Next, mm-hmm. meaning the transition. So we accept the boys where they are. Whatever mm-hmm. position that they're in, we accept them. And it's not about their current position. It's about the next phase of your life. As you transition from adolescence into young adulthood, we want to be there to help you provide a foundation for you. We are firm believers that men are the foundation of households, and we're losing our young men. Mm-hmm. We're losing them to social media, guns, and drugs. So next really means just a transition from your current situation to the next.
And can you talk about how you wind up gathering together the young guys? Because, and you especially mentioned during the pandemic, and I wanted to bring that up because it was harder to reach people during the pandemic because of social mm-hmm. distancing, and a lot of kids couldn't even go to school. They had to go to school virtually. And then you brought up the mental mm-hmm. health aspect of it. A lot of kids were affected because they couldn't be with their friends or they couldn't do the things that they normally did. And as we mentioned earlier in our conversation, they have access to social media and television and streaming
Correct.
Services.
Correct.
And sometimes that whole thing just overwhelmed them and made a lot of kids depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you able to gather the kids that you were able to reach in Tarrant County?
Well, I actually reached out to some friends that knew exactly what I did. They, you know, and if anyone knows me, they know that I really love kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there were some kids at different schools throughout the Metroplex that people referred me to. And it was a lot easier than you would think because if a lot of parents were trying to find something for their kids to do.
Wait a minute. You just nailed it. They had nothing else to do, so it wasn't like, oh, they were too busy.
Correct.
Very
and,
nice.
And I tell all the parents, you know, most parents want their kids involved in something positive,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Again, our boys are between 15 and 21 years old, and you know, you can't make them do anything. And so one of the things that we told them and we continue to tell them is that philanthropy is big in our organization. It's the foundation of who we are. So if your son does not want to give back to the community that's given to us, then they can't be a next man.
Right.
There's no way, because this is who we are. And so all parents would just say, yeah, take my son, do whatever you want with him, because he's just sitting here watching TV.
Right, he's just
or
gaming.
On social media.
Right.
So, correct. And I utilize, you know, the resources as far as, you know, friends and family members who knew kids
mm-hmm.
that wanted to get out and just kind of, you know, breathe a little bit, you know, to show the community that they're more than what people believe they are as far as just social media and things
right.
like that.
They didn't want to fall into a stereotype. They're like, nah, I have something to offer,
correct.
And I'm actually kind of smart,
correct.
And I got more to give than what you assume.
Correct. Yes, sir.
And so you were able to get these kids together, and then I'm sure they talked amongst them, their friends as well. That probably added to a few of them, right, to
yep.
grow it a little bit more. And sometimes word of mouth is the best credibility.
Correct. And again, a grassroots organization with limited financial means, you know, we have to be creative. And I'll tell you this,
we won't accept just any young man.
Right.
Again, because of their age, they have to be in the action phase of their life. They have to have a need for mentorship and want a need for mentorship. You know, and I tell them all the time, and if you have a goal, I can help you get there. But if you don't want anything for yourself, it's hard for someone to want something for you that you don't want.
Exactly.
You know, so I turn some boys, there are boys that we will turn away if they're not in that phase in their life, you know, but, and I tell the parents, and we make the commitment to the parents that I'll never leave their son. I'll never leave them. If they have something that they want to do, I'll be there and I'll walk with them every step of the way. And that's the commitment that all of our volunteers have, all of the men and women that tirelessly reach out to these kids. And I tell people, commitment is not convenient. So when you get that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning and you've got to be at work at 6, that commitment is when they need you. You've got to get out of your bed. And so it's the same way for our volunteers. I won't just accept any volunteer because it's another body. I want an able and willing body,
mm-hmm.
not just a body. So we lead with our heart, and that's the foundation of who we are.
How many of the kids were you able to take with you to the town hall meeting on Wednesday, or any of them were allowed to go?
Yeah, so the great thing about our boys right now is a lot of them are working.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing. That's a good
thing. That's a good thing. So I think we had about 9 of our boys there.
Good.
And it's funny that a lot of the interactions that of the kids that were there and the coordinators that got those kids there, we all kind of rub elbows. So North Crowley High School was there. One of the assistant principals there is, again, one of my buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of mentoring together. If he needs something, he'll pick up the phone and call me. So a lot of the kids that we interact with, although they're not on the one-on-one basis that we have in our organization, we all rub elbows in some manner. So a lot of those kids are already new.
That's fantastic. If you wanted people to know more about what you're doing, and by the way, we're talking again with Robert Walsh. He's the president of Next Metropolitan Foundation. And I know it's got to be hard for you because you're currently an Arlington police officer as well. So you probably have very, very limited time just to spend. And so I was wondering if there's any way, if anybody wanted to partner with you guys or volunteer with you guys or help grow your organization more, is there a way that they can reach you, or if there's a way that they might be able to tell you about their kids or help you out some kind of way?
Yes, sir, definitely. They can always reach out to us on via email. And again, that's Robert Walsh at thenextfoundation.org. That's thenexfoundation.org. Or we're on social media. They can also call me, 817-725-4040. And again, we're always willing and looking for volunteers, again, committed individuals that want to make a difference in the lives of our future leaders.
Yeah, I just love the website. I love all the work that you're doing. One of the things you mentioned on here, you foster positive relationships with a diverse group of young men and equip them with the appropriate skills and resources to overcome deficiencies that adversely affect them. And that's all a part of the process. And I also like that's actually part of your story. You lived that growing up. Again, you weren't ready.
Correct.
When you graduated, you say you barely graduated because you just weren't really thinking about it hard enough. You were like, okay, I'll get around to it. And then all of a sudden life happened, right?
Yes, sir. Going through the motions, just being a kid.
Right. And again, fortunately for you, you wound up going to college. And how many degrees you got? You got the master's too?
Yes, sir. Yep.
I mean, and I just feel like we're fortunate to have you here in Dallas-Fort Worth. And in the position that you're in, not only you know, in the law enforcement world with the first responders, but you're also there for the kids. And like you said, a lot of your friends had no idea what you wanted to do and how you wanted to impact some lives out there. So we appreciate you, man.
I thank you. Thank you so much. This is my calling. This is my ministry. My mom always said I was going to be in the ministry, and I never understood it, but the mentoring aspect is my ministry. You know, I'm giving back because someone gave it to me. I think we definitely, you know, have to leave something for our next generation. And my mark as Sergeant Walsh is important, but my mark as Robert Walsh is even more important because I have kids, a daughter too, that looks up to me as well. And I want to be able to leave a lasting, a positive legacy on the community.
Exactly. And again, we are so fortunate that you're here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and leaving this impact with the Next Metropolitan Foundation. Again, it's www.thenextmetropolitanfoundation.org. Again, Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. I'm Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, thanking all of you for joining us. Tune in next week as we focus on other organizations doing great things in our community right here on Better Living. So long, everybody.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.